It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282. And let's talk legal.
And let's get started with that. And so Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins join us now. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, let's talk about restrictions in deeds and what we mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our listeners, it seems, folks in general, want to put some sort of confines around the ownership of their property.
Mm-hmm.
And they many times will include this in a deed of conveyance in some way. Such things as, you know, this is family property and it's never to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
This is property, that is used for a certain purpose and is always supposed to be used for this purpose, you
know.
Like
a farm.
Like a farm.
Mm-hmm.
These are what we would call deed restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And what our listeners need to know is that the law in the state of North Carolina is not particularly going to encourage
mm-hmm.
these kinds of restrictions. Our general court system, our court cases in North Carolina, are pretty clear, if you will, that these are what we might call a restraint on the sale of the property,
mm-hmm.
on the marketability of the property.
Right, right.
And as such, they are kind of frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
So the word of the day that Wes and I are going to talk about a little bit today, and we can spin off in some other kinds of directions with regard to deeds in general,
mm-hmm.
like the difference between even a warranty deed and a quit claim deed. That
okay.
is many times
confused,
not understood
yeah.
by many folks. But be careful with these kinds of sentences, add-ons in your deeds.
Mm-hmm.
There's one on my desk right now that is causing a family a lot of consternation where, of course, it was that, quote, quit claim deed.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But, you know, the lady sat down at her table and added all of these wishes and wants with regard to her home place. And, of course, she's no longer living, and all of these wishes and wants, if you will, are in that deed.
Mm-hmm.
And they are causing a lot of problem for the children and the grandchildren.
So that's not a covenant on the deed, but it's a restriction on the deed itself.
Well, it is a covenant or mm-hmm. restriction. I think those words can be used interchangeably. More like what I would call it is a cloud or
mm-hmm.
problem. Okay.
Yeah, right.
It is, some lawyers might call it a covenant. Some lawyers might call it a restriction. I mean, the bottom line is that it's some sort of wish or want in a deed, and what in the world does it mean, and is it enforceable?
It's an impediment in one way or the other.
It's an impediment for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's be clear here a minute. Certainly, there's the right way and the wrong way. I
mm-hmm.
mean, if you want property to be used for a certain charitable purpose, or there is a certain, you know, overriding factor with regard to your property, then consult with a lawyer, and possibly it could be that restriction, covenant, impediment, whatever we want to call it, could be legally drafted
mm-hmm.
and placed on the property in an appropriate manner with appropriate provisions.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an area of the law where I think Wes and I will communicate that if ever there is the need for a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
it is in this area of the law where you are attempting to place some sort of restriction or covenant or want or wish with regard to your property on the official title of the property. This is not something that any of us want you listeners, our clients, to do in a pro se,
right.
you know, willy-nilly kind of way, in a hope and a prayer that you
mm-hmm.
did it right. Because, again, it's not only going to cause problems with regard to the title, it likely could be unenforceable.
Well, you know, we've talked about it on this program a lot. This is, in fact, where I've learned this, is that we talk about in North Carolina, I don't know if it's true in other states, but we talk about the highest and best use of property as being kind of inherent in our understanding of property ownership. So does that affect this?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, when you're talking about receiving a deed or your deed that you got for your property, in most cases, it's not going to have a restriction in it.
Mm-hmm.
You might have some limitations on what you can do. Like, for example, if you're in a subdivision where there's covenants, then even if there's not any reference to the covenants at all, if the covenants are in the chain of title, which they probably are if the subdivision was set up correctly,
right,
you're subject to those. So mm-hmm. that's a similar type situation. But what we're more talking about, you know, today is specific language put in the actual deed, maybe restricting the use, which may be a restraint on alienation, which is a restraint on what Cecil was saying, marketability of the property, mm-hmm. Which is something that then brings us to this overall kind of common law principle of highest and best use of the property. You know what? We're not going to lock down real estate. Mm-hmm. We're not going to lock down property so you can't do anything with it. We're not going to allow there to be restrictions in deeds that last in perpetuity because, you know, it may be in 1850 when the deed was done, an interest in keeping this 50 acres, for example, operating as the family farm.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2019, hey, we might want to sell that property for $1 million and develop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the need of property, I mean, this area, I guess at one point in time, probably was all just wooded, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know,
and or farmland
and owned by, you know, a king somewhere, you know, that kind of thing. If there was a restriction on mm-hmm. how it could be used, there would be no Morehead City, for example. So there's all these rules that we deal with, and some of the rules are general and some of them are more specific as it relates to the restraints that you can put on alienation. One rule that comes to mind when we're talking about kind of locking down the use of property for a long period of time is the rule against perpetuities. And you know, what that basically is in a very general context is that the law is not going to support restrictions on property. It's usually in a deed or a will or some mm-hmm. type of instrument. It could be a trust, you know, for years on end. Beyond the life of people, you
right.
know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Not to get into details, because the rule against perpetuities is somewhat of a complicated concept, but it is a very beneficial tool for folks who get caught in this situation as well.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the situation Cecil was just mentioning with regard to the deed on his desk and the issue with regard to the restraint on the property, that type of thing. I'm not involved in that case, but just hearing about what he was saying about it
mm-hmm.
seems to me that that might frame up as a situation where that restraint may be in violation of the rule against perpetuities, maybe other problems with regard to that. And if that's the case, that may be something where that deed can be brought before the court in an appropriate legal action, like an action to quiet title or a declaratory judgment action or something like that, the appropriate tool would need to be decided on as far as how to bring that. And the court may make a determination based on the existing law in the state that that restriction is no longer enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Superior Court would have a right, you know, to enter the order, in the event that the law applied, to basically nullify that restriction. So, yes, highest and best use, I think that's generally, you know, what we're talking about, because generally you do have a right to put restrictions on your property.
Right, right.
But there are these overriding common law rules and also some specific statutory rules that limit that.
Well, there's some clearly that are illegal, like putting racial restrictions on it or something, or illegal. So there's other
right.
law
you get into even
in there.
Constitutional issues,
yes.
you know, with
right.
with regard to that.
So. Right.
So let's talk about those kinds of deeds
yes.
and before we take a break. Let's go through those.
Very good. Ben, in the state of North Carolina, there are deeds with warranties and mm-hmm. there are deeds without warranty. What do we mean by that? A deed without a warranty is basically saying, whatever I've got, if I've got anything,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what I have. I'm not promising you anything. But if I have an interest in this property, then I'm going to give it to you. Mm-hmm. And that is known as the famous quit claim deed. I quit to you, give to you whatever I happen to have.
People often think you're saying quick, but it's quit.
Quit.
Q-U-I-T.
Q-U-I-T. Quit. Now, again, the taker of this property, could likely have, and many times does have, very good title.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But not necessarily so. Again, it's a deed where there's conveyance, but no, promise from the giver, mm-hmm. known as the grantor in a deed, of any kind of warranty. Now, the alternative to a quit claim deed, or a deed you get whatever I have,
mm-hmm.
is a warranty deed. A warranty deed has warranties that say that I, the grantor or the giver of the property, mm-hmm. have title to this property. Okay. And I warrant the title against anyone, who may claim title. And so I am giving you, a warranty with my conveyance. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, big difference in the nature of the deed. Most, as one would expect, any kind of, you know, real estate transaction involving a lender,
mm-hmm.
putting a mortgage on property, the classic purchase, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of a piece of land and or home or office building or anything like that would most of the time transfer by warranty deed. The, offer to purchase and contract, that our realtors use mm-hmm. and that is approved by the North Carolina, you know, Bar Association, North Carolina Board of Realtors, et cetera. Of course, most calls for a warranty deed that the seller,
mm-hmm.
The grantor of the deed will warrant to the buyer that at the day of closing, they will be signing a warranty deed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more in detail about what are the circumstances of those coming up in just a moment. And if you have a question you would like to ask on this or other legal matters, you can give us a call at 247-7282. Hey, welcome back here. We're talking about ownership of property and the deeds and what they all mean and warranty deeds and quit claim deeds and all of that and all the circumstances that surround it, and it can make a mess.
Yeah, Cecil was actually talking about a fact scenario. It's kind of interesting during the commercial. I hadn't heard anything about that. I guess he could go through that and we can pick that apart a little bit. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that and let him go through this twist and turn.
We probably do have enough time, but yesterday I have, you know, some inquiries, and this inquiry came in, and I returned the call, and of course it was, the facts are that there's two, if you will, two young couples, and they're best friends, and the one couple is grilling out with the other couple, but at their home. Well, one of the couples, let's say couple A, who mm-hmm. owns the home,
mm-hmm.
okay,
right.
and has a mortgage on the home, couple A, moves away
mm-hmm.
out of the state. Couple B says, well, we'd love to stay in your home, and we'll pay the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Couple A says, wow, that sounds great. All right, we'll just hold on to the home. Y'all, couple B, you live in our home. And you pay the mortgage. Well, that's the beginning of the story.
Mm-hmm.
3 or 4 years later now, couple B is still living in the home,
mm-hmm.
has been paying the mortgage, has made improvements to the home. Florence, our good hurricane friend, came to town, and there were repairs that they made voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
Couple B, of course, has taken it upon themselves to improve the home. But they don't have title to the home.
Right.
Couple A does. Nor does couple B, nor is couple B on the note or the deed of trust that is on the property, which is in favor, of course, you know, which was put in place by couple A. So here we are.
Essentially, they've just rented it for the price of the mortgage.
Essentially, right. They have, but they have improved it and bettered it and, you know, maybe unjustly enriched it. All of those kinds of issues are out there. Now, the interesting thing is that couple B is who called me, and couple B said, well, couple A now is saying they'll just deed it to us.
Mm-hmm.
Why won't that just work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what this goes back to now, our deed conveyances, Ben. I mean, couple A can deed it to couple B. Fine. They can, quote, quick claim it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she used that terminology with me. But guess what? There's a mortgage on the property.
Yeah.
And so what we need to know now, the point of this story, one of the points, is that, you know, you can quit claim, you can even by warranty deed transfer your property all day long, but you are going to transfer it with the then existing encumbrances.
Right. Right.
I mean, if there's a lien out there, if there's a materialman's lien, a worker's lien, a mortgage, an easement,
mm-hmm.
taxes, back ad valorem taxes, condemnation, whatever the case might be, if that is out there existing at the time that the deed transfer occurs, the deed transfer does not, you know, make all of that stuff go away.
Mm-hmm.
This client, couple B, if you will, again, thought that if they got a deed that the mortgage, well, you know, we're not on the mortgage. We didn't sign the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
The mortgage isn't ours, Mr. Harvell. The mortgage is couple A. Okay? Well, I don't mind who signed the mortgage, but I can tell you, couple B, that it's on your property.
Yeah.
And if couple A deeds the property to you, the mortgage is still going to be there. And
right.
It's going to have to be satisfied and or honored. That, of course, was a surprise to her,
mm-hmm.
couple B, because she was excited that she was going to get a deed, and she thought that the mortgage
was just
going to
be a gift.
Thought that the mortgage was going to go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's not a lot of, as one would expect, there's not a lot of equity in the property.
Mm-hmm.
There's mostly the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But anyway, what the point here is to make it clear to our listeners that property transfers subject to the then existing encumbrances that are on the property. And this is, of course, why buyer beware,
mm-hmm.
caveat emptor is known in the law. We buyers have to have title searches done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sellers many times do not in good faith know that maybe there's a pending condemnation proceeding by the state of North Carolina, or maybe
right.
there's
a highway coming
you know,
through.
Taxes that didn't get paid, you know, 10 years ago and still are on the property, or any kind of number of things that can be out there touching and concerning their property. A very common one is that the ancient mortgage, the mortgage of 10 or 15, 20 years ago, has long since been paid. The seller absolutely thinks that their mortgage has been canceled and has been, and they know that it's been paid, but it wasn't canceled.
Mm-hmm.
It's still sitting on public record as an outstanding mortgage. This is a very common thing. It just didn't get canceled.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I know we're running out of time. I'm a little bit all over everywhere this morning.
Well, let's go ahead. Let me go ahead and take a break. But we'll come back to that in a moment, because the scenario that you plan, that you lay out there as a quit claim deed is exactly what you're talking about, is if I have anything here.
Correct.
And again, that knowledge is incomplete.
Correct.
More to come in a moment here on the Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Hey, welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And also during the break, Wes, you were talking about when somebody buys a property at the courthouse steps on a foreclosure, they may not be getting what they think they're getting.
Yeah, no doubt. So, you know, like Cecil was saying, you know, when you buy that property, buy real property, you know, you're going to buy it with all of its warts, you know,
yeah,
all the problems that it has. And they're not always, things that you see with the naked eye. Obviously, we're talking about doing a title search here, mm-hmm. seeing what mortgages or deeds of trust are still on the property, making sure taxes are paid, you know, these type of things. If there are covenants in the chain of title somewhere or some type of restrictions or easements or whatever it may be, you know, you've got to get that title search done. And that's, you have to get that done in order to get title insurance too. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the title insurance is, you know, you pay one premium. It's normally pretty inexpensive. And in the event that something comes up later on, then potentially you'd have a claim. So the title insurance would help you, you know, fix
right.
that. So another area where we see that, as you just mentioned, is, you know, in the context of a judicial sale, like a foreclosure. Just because, you know, you're the high bidder on a property in a foreclosure, for example, or any kind of judicial sale, that doesn't mean the property is free and clear when you take title to it. I mean, mm-hmm. it could be a junior lien holder, a junior mortgage holder,
right.
Who is actually proceeding with the foreclosure. Now, the senior lien holder commencing with a foreclosure is going to wipe out the juniors. Mm-hmm. It's going to wipe those out. So it would clean those out. But if it's a second or third mortgage and that's the bank or the lender that's proceeding with the foreclosure, well, and you just buy the property based on that foreclosure and don't get the title search done, then you may be buying that property for what you think is, you know, $100,000. Mm-hmm. But in fact, you're buying it for $100,000 and it has a $150,000 mortgage on
That's right.
you know, because it was maybe leaned up at the time when the property appraised at a higher value or something like that. Or, it, you know, just maybe a situation where you're buying property that has this, you know, mortgage on it and it's your property. It doesn't matter that you didn't sign, obviously, mm-hmm. the promissory note
right.
relative to the mortgage. So when the property sold at the courthouse steps and the junior lien holder is paid from that and you take title to it, then all of a sudden the senior lien holder decides to foreclose as well, guess what? You lose your property. But in the event that the title search is done, then you learn about all that.
Mm-hmm.
You make a determination as to, you know, exactly what you're willing to do to buy the property at the courthouse steps, what you're willing to pay, you know, all of these type things. So getting that title search is obviously very important. It's dangerous sometimes, you know, just
right.
saying, oh, here's the deed,
right.
you know, taking the deed because you don't know really what you're getting.
Any kind of transaction, conversation, event touching and concerning real estate, we suggest you talk to a lawyer. It might be that the lawyer doesn't have to do anything or maybe mm-hmm. get involved, but consult with the lawyer and check with that. You know, Ben, it might sound fundamental that, but so many do not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. so many will just say, well, John, you know, I'll quit claim you that property for $10,000. You know,
and there it is.
I'll do that. You know, they go online, they get a quick claim deed, they go get one somehow, a bookstore. They're available, by mm-hmm. the way, in those places.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Staples.
Yeah. All right. Again, but if you want to get the real advice and at the right time, you want to call the folks at Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law, online at harvellandcollins.com.